Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Couple Speak Relationship Forum on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Susan Lager, a psychotherapist and coach at the Couple Center and Couple Speak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where I come to you live alternate Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Now, tonight should be interesting because I'm coming to you in the middle of a thunderstorm. I'm here in on the southern coast of Maine, and it's been, there's been a lot of lightning and booms and all kinds of blasts. So if I bomb out in the middle of the show, you'll know that it was the weather. It hopefully was not me. Anyway, tonight's episode, July 13th, Communication Problems Gone with Simple 5-Minute Fixes. It's finally happening after getting rescheduled 2 weeks ago because basically I was goofing off. I gave myself permission just to call it a day, and I hung up a gone fishing sign, and I don't even remember what I did, but I decided that after 13 shows, I deserved a little break and a free alternate Wednesday off. So in my case, that was a good thing. But here I am. And tonight, I'm very excited about tonight because I will be here on my own without a guest, a co-host guest, but with an open mic so listeners can participate in the conversation about this very important topic that I think anyone can relate to, whether you're in or out of a relationship. And we already have some listeners on the line. And I'm going to ask people to introduce themselves in a second after I just go over just a few technical things. Here's the technical scoop before we begin. As you probably know, your toll-free call-in number is 877-497-9046. I'm telling you that in case you dialed in live streaming or if you lost the number or whatever. If you have ADD, you know that that's the number. 877-497-9046, and it is toll-free. All callers will be muted unless you have a question or a comment, and if so, press the 1 key on your phone, and you'll be brought onto the air for the duration of the program. So I want to we already have two callers, so I want to welcome them. Caller number one with a 772 area code. Hello, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Rosie, and I'm from Boca Raton, Florida.
Hi, well, welcome, Rosie. How's it doing there in Florida? Hopefully you're not having the kind of weather we are here.
Oh, actually, it has been a little rainy,
yeah.
But it's very humid and warm,
sure.
As is usual for this type of year.
Yeah, Florida. Actually, here on the southern coast of Maine, it's been unbelievably hot. It's been kind of like I liken it to Mississippi. It's been pretty boiling, and I'm hoping that with this weather, with this storm, it'll cool things off. It already feels like it is. Well, welcome, Rosie, and I'll be feel free as we move along to interject and to share any questions you may have or any particular scenarios that you have a dilemma around, okay?
I sure will.
Okay. Now we have another caller who's already raised his hand, and I'm only going to bring in people who have raised their hand with a 207 area code. Hello, caller. Can you say what your name is and where you're from?
Hi, I'm Joe from Kittery, Maine.
Hello, Joe. Hello, Joe. Oh, so you're
Hi.
Also from Maine.
Yeah, and it's rainy here as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a beautiful night. We need the rain, you know?
I know.
It's very good.
I know. Well, welcome. And I hope that you enjoy the show. And same thing for you. If you have any questions or anything you just want to share, this is not intended as a lecture, although I have some things that I've learned from my years as a psychotherapist dealing mainly with couples and as a coach and from my own personal experience. But I'm also interested in what other people's dilemmas about this subject or other people's thoughts. Anyway, the topic is about communication problems. And I find that is probably the biggest complaint that people in partnerships have, whether it's a partnership with an intimate partner or a very close friend or just a family member, that people really get into some major dilemmas or snags around how to talk so they feel they'll be understood, and also how to listen so that you feel like you can understand. And there's a lot of conflict and a lot of hardship, I think, that happens in relationships because people get into what I feel are some pretty predictable and regular problems. And I'm just going to dive in here and talking about, I came up with seven, okay? But I'm sure there's many more than seven, but I've kind of condensed it to seven problems. And again, listeners, if you want to interject, just do that. One thing that I find creates problems for people is poor timing, where, and you know, one partner will just start talking to the other, and it's often about something that's critical, something important, not just did you get milk. And what happens is there's not necessarily a buy-in by the listener, the supposed listener. So partner A starts talking, and partner B is either on their cell phone or they're watching TV or they're just engaged with something, and there's no buy-in. And I think that's a problem because there hasn't been – it's not a conversation by consensus, as I like to think of it. There isn't an agreement to do it. And those conversations go really sour because often partner B feels ambushed and they never signed on. And partner A feels like, what am I talking to a wall? Don't you hear me? Where are you? So that's one poor timing issue. The other one that I see a lot in my work is that one partner will start talking, or both people will participate in a conversation in the worst possible atmosphere. So, for instance, they're out on a special date or at a special occasion, and they start a conversation about something very heavy and something very substantive and something serious, and the atmosphere is either noisy or it just doesn't jive with the fact of the conversation. And what do either of you brave listeners who've already kind of asked the question and have been brought onto the air, do you have a sense of what the fix might be? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, do you have a sense of what the fix might be, what I would suggest that people do to avoid the poor timing issue?
Well, obviously to be, you know, thoroughly aware of where the other person is at, that
mm-hmm.
if the person on the phone is on the phone for a good reason or looking at some text message for a good reason, to kind of, wait for the moment to end and say, something to the effect of, oh, you know, was that good, blah, 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 and know that it's ended. And vice versa, the person who might be taking a text message should be considerate of the fact that we're, you know, sitting in a room trying to communicate. Do I really need to take text messages right now?
Mm-hmm.
And to be considerate back and forth and aware of what, you know, the other person is feeling and doing.
You hit the nail on the head. To ask first, to say something to the effect that, is this a good time? Unless, of course, it's a simple informational sharing where you might literally be saying, where's the bottle of milk that you got? But partner A who wants to talk, to be aware, to cognizant of the atmosphere and the context. And if they're not really clear, just to ask. And what I say to partner B, the person who's being invited into the conversation, is not to just take it off the table and say, no, this is a terrible time. but to give some indication about, I'll be available in 10 minutes or later or tomorrow morning, to put it back on the table at some point and to give some indication about what would be a better time. Then you have what I think of as a conversation by consensus. Now, have either of you experienced this problem in any of your relationships where either you feel ambushed or you don't feel listened to?
Well, this is Rosie, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
I very often feel as if I'm not being heard, and so therefore I tend to say everything twice.
Okay, that's another problem. Mm-hmm. Repetition. Okay, but have you ever wondered if you're not being heard because maybe you didn't check out with, is this your husband? Or you generally don't feel heard?
Oh, actually, it's my husband and my children.
Okay, okay.
Yes.
All right.
They'll ask me not to repeat myself. And,
okay.
Catch myself, you know, saying it twice, and I then say, well, I assume you didn't listen to me the first time. That's probably why I say everything twice.
Okay. Well, I'm sure it contributes to a feeling that maybe if you just say it again, maybe it'll register. Obviously, and that's another problem that I'm going to get into later on, repetition as a form of too much information, a kind of overload in a conversation. But, it, you know, what I would encourage you to wonder about is the context, whether you say to anybody, I have something I wanted to talk to you about. Is this a good time? And to consider whether you're getting a buy-in. And if you get a blank stare, or if your husband or your children just don't pay attention, to ask, you know, obviously you're not available right now. Is there a time that would be better to talk about this? So that you know that you have an active participant in the conversation. Does that sound like it might make a difference in your case? Hello?
Hi.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. How about you, Rosie? I don't hear you. I think Rosie may have disconnected herself.
Yeah, well, in thinking about this from my vantage point, you know, part of the problem in that type of communication could well evolve around the fact that one partner or the other repeatedly does the same behavior of either not listening or, on the other partner's part, of talking so often that the other partner simply stops listening.
Yeah.
And, you know, that could be something that partners may talk about and try to resolve in an equitable way by saying, hey, you know, you're asking me these questions all the time, and it, you know, interrupts my peace of mind or my continuity with whatever I'm doing. And the other partner could say, hey, what are you always doing that, you know, causes you to feel that your continuity is being interrupted?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Speaking about being interrupted, excuse me, Susan. I lost you on my speakerphone, so I had to call you back on this phone. Sorry.
Yeah, I thought we lost you, Rosie.
Yes, you lost me.
Okay, but
well, I didn't hear everything you said to me.
Okay.
But mainly, the crux of it all is I think everybody just needs to be heard.
Well, yeah, but we're looking at the things that interfere with being heard, and part of what you were saying. And what's your name again, sir, from Kittery?
Joe.
Joe. Okay, I'm sorry. What Joe was saying was that you know, that it may relate to another communication problem, which is somebody being a kind of broken record about maybe the same issues. And it sounds like an experience of dread on the part of partner B. I've heard this all before. It's a kind of here we go again. So that's something, actually, it's a different kind of repetition. You're not just repeating a sentence, which is one of the things I've mentioned later, but sounds like, you know, that might be another one to add to the list, where there's repetition about an issue and there's a kind of sameness about the approach in a way that inhibits listening and inhibits some kind of engagement, right?
Yeah. Exactly, but I'm really not liking that word dread.
Yeah. But it sounds like...
That's really giving me pause to think more about this.
I'm sure nobody likes the word dread, but...
It's turning out to be much more serious than I had anticipated.
Right. Nobody likes the word dread, but, obviously that's something that... is important for people to be mindful about. Are you using the same approach in the same way about a topic in a way that may generate dread and avoidance and withdrawal? So I would add that to the big list. Now let me get into the next one, my next one anyway. One thing that I see is what I would call no definition about the agenda for the conversation. And also assumptions made by the listener about what would be a helpful response. So, for instance, partner A, the talker, approaches and just starts talking and doesn't say what they need in a conversation. And I'd say, this may sound sexist, but more often women are guilty of this, They just start to talk the way they do with their girlfriends or their sisters, because with those people, there's a kind of intuitive sense of what they need. They develop the whole cueing system around that. But they start to talk, and they wonder why often it's husbands will listen and think they're being helpful by just offering to fix the problem as the helpful response, because that's what men are primed for in our culture. And what I say to couples is that there are any one of there's usually about five different motives, and I think transactional analysis back in the 60s and 70s talked about how when you initiate a conversation, you might just want to vent, you might just want some validation about a feeling. You might want help with a solution. That's only one possible motive for the conversation. You might want a reality check, one of those, this is how I reacted, am I crazy or what? Would you react the same way? Or you might just want to share information. I just want you to know that so-and-so called and we have a date on such and such a time. And I think... It's really important for the talker to try to give just a brief heads up about what their agenda is. And not a big spiel, but something, it might sound something like, I just want to vent. Or I'm not really sure what to do about this situation. I'd like your opinion. So they cue the listener about how to listen better. And so I think the fix is for the talker to reflect about what they need and to say it up front, and also for the listener to, if they're not sure, and this is aimed more often at men, although women are guilty of this too, if you don't know, ask. Because so often men, I see husbands trying to be helpful, and they're listening and offering a solution, and then their wives are furious. I didn't need that. That's not what I asked for. And I wonder if either of you have experienced this in your own relationships.
Well, in a sense, I have a question that you might have looked at in the past in your work. is there possibly a deeper issue that would cause the talker to talk a lot and the listener to block a lot?
Absolutely.
And
oh, yeah.
Well,
that's another whole program. There are many reasons why a talker talks a lot. They might be obsessive and they can't stop. It's the way their brain works.
Lonely.
Or, yes. Or lonely. Or they might need attention. Or they might have been traumatized about something that because when people have been through trauma, I don't know if you notice, you watch people on the news who've been through trauma, they have to tell the whole story and keep telling it and telling it. There's a kind of need to talk about that. There could be, it's a very good point you're bringing up, Joe, a lot of possible reasons. It could be a form of control that it's the way they kind of, they maneuver being central in the situation. And there are probably as many reasons why people tune out. You know, it may have something to do with the family of origin. If that's what you observed your parents doing or your family doing, and it seems like the norm, that's what you'll do in conversations. So
I guess, you know, in your work, have you encountered a kind of a key, maybe from 1 to 10 number, 1 or 2 issue that causes this type of behavior to happen?
Oh, a key issue?
Yeah.
I would have to think about that. It probably has mostly to do with the issue of connection and what one person needs for connection and attention and love versus what another person needs. Sex is usually part of that. Intimacy is part of that. But it's generally, in my experience, and I'm not saying that's typical of the world, but in my experience professionally and personally, it's really about what one person needs in the way of feeling loved. There's all kinds of, I mean, that could be another whole, that's a great, you're bringing up an important point. That would be another entire show, that what issues are more likely to cause that dynamic and what history would be more conducive to that dynamic. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it'd be very interesting, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Would you want possibly another show about that?
Sounds fantastic.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Okay. This show tonight is, I'm aware that it, and maybe it'll seem a little surface, it's really about the mechanics of conversation and how, regardless of what the issue is, how you'll be better primed for a better conversation if you're mindful of your mechanics. Okay? Kind of like the rules of engagement. And in my experience, no matter what you're talking about, it will go better if you're mindful about your rules of engagement.
In other words, think before you speak.
Well, think before you speak, yep, absolutely. And that's partly what I was saying in this, when the talker just starts talking, think about what you want. Think about what you want in the conversation. What is it that you want from your listener? And there could be any one of, like, maybe 5 or 6 things you might want, but think about what you want and convey it. And if we look at the first thing, look at the context. Be mindful about the context. Am I talking into what will feel like a vacuum? Okay? Now,
well, sometimes it's hard to say something. You want to convey a thought, but you really don't know how you'll come across, because you might not want to be confrontational or hurt that person's feelings.
Right, right. Well, that's a very good point. That how you
present
something.
I actually had something like that happen to me today.
Okay.
If you'd like me to share, or should I wait?
Oh no, sure. Why don't you share that?
Okay.
So in other words, how to say something in a way where you're more likely.
Well, no, I have wanted to say something quite often to my children. I have grown children. I'm kind of giving away my age. And I invited them over for breakfast as this morning, and went out of my way to make a very lovely breakfast, not just an ordinary breakfast. And as they very often do, after we had finished eating, they got up and said their goodbyes and left me with a great big mess.
Oh, God.
And I must say that, you know, we had a very enjoyable time together. And I didn't want to put a damper on that time by saying, you know, guess what? Hot flash, guys. Mom doesn't like to clean up either. So if we all do it together, we can get it out of the way quickly, and I won't be stuck with the job. And
you
I
wanted
very okay. I wanted to say that,
okay.
And it's happened 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
I guess maybe it's just the nature of being a mom, that nothing is too much for mom. And I don't know how to convey that without putting a damper on the lovely time that we had just experienced.
Okay.
After they leave, I feel very put upon and not unappreciated.
I'm sure.
I don't know. Is this turning into another show, Susan?
It could be. But no, I think you're bringing up a very important point. One communication problem is how to say what you want to or need to say in a way where you don't alienate the other person unnecessarily.
You know, something I kind of agree with that, you know, possibly before the brunch to say, you know, I have a need to make this wonderful food for you, and I really enjoy it, but I also have a need to not have to do all of the dishes and all of the cleanup that's involved. How do you feel about helping with that afterwards? Because you're kind of expressing your needs at that point, and you're expressing a need that says, I'm vulnerable, I love you, you know, I want to do these things for you, but also, I really don't want to do them if I have to do all the cleanup and all the garbage that's involved in making something very special happen. In that sense, I guess, Rosie, you would be expressing your need. I don't know. What do you think about that, Susan?
Well, Joe, I agree with you, but I also feel that I should not have to express that need, that it's really quite rudimentary.
Well, and that's a big one for a lot of people. Why should I have to say this or that? Actually, that's a very big one. Some things feel self-evident, and it feels insulting and outrageous, and people feel resentful about why should I have to state the obvious? And sometimes you need to. That's just the nature of it. And I think part of what happens often with particularly mothers and children is that children make presumptions about mothers being unconditionally available and servicing them. And I think often unwittingly just kind of take advantage of that. It's generally not a malicious thing, but I think they can be a little out of touch. And I think mothers, in my experience, keep that scenario going by just filling in the gaps and over-functioning and not saying anything. So they perpetuate the myth that they are a one-woman show. I think if you can find a way to speak to the fact that it would be a much more, as Joe said, a much more pleasant visit if you got some help afterward each time, that it doesn't feel fair and it's not fun for you to be left with a mess. But I think
should I do that before the Eggs Benedict or after the blueberry muffin? Homemade blueberry muffin.
Obviously, what you're bringing up is that you don't want to ruin the moment. You're having
yes.
a pleasant breakfast, and you don't want to ruin the
yes.
moment. I think what I would do and what I would recommend that you do is that you say something on the front end when you're inviting them. And you can let them know that I think if there's a way that you can let them know that you love having them and that you want to have them, but that one thing that will work better for you is if they participate in the cleanup, that it's tiring for you and you really need them to help in the cleanup. And what it'll open up, obviously, is them saying, so what have you been mad all this time? And I think if it were me, I would not open up Pandora's box. I would say, well, you know, I've been doing it and it's just occurred to me that it would feel better if you kind of gave back to me in that way. It doesn't feel good to me if you come and then you just leave me with a mess. And I, in the name of having a better relationship with you, I'm speaking up rather than just get quietly resentful. I think you want to lead with your positive intentions. I think you always want to lead with your intention to improve the relationship, to have a better time, etc.
Excuse me, Susan. I think my intention is quite clear since I went to all this trouble by 8 o'clock in the morning.
No. I'm not talking about that intention. The intention in the conversation to have a better relationship with them. That obviously your intention is to give them a good meal and have fun with them, but by bringing it up to say, you know, I'm saying this because I love you and I care about you and I value my time with you and I want to have more of these experiences, but we need to do them in a way that works for me also. And I don't want to become resentful, and so I'm telling you. So that way you're leading with your intention about the relationship. And I think it kind of primes people to listen better. I think if you just lead with a complaint, they're just going to think, boy. Yeah.
Here we go again.
One of the problems with doing that is it's a lot of work to do that.
Yes.
And, you know, most of us don't want to exert that particular extra effort because for Rosie, it kind of spoils the fun of the whole thing to have to proceed by saying, hey, you know, I want to do this, but well, how about helping to clean up?
Yeah.
On the other hand, it may be the only way to really say, you want to help to clean up? If not, then why don't we cancel the breakfast?
Yeah, no.
And I
you
know
don't
Rosie
want to get
doesn't
to that
want to
point.
Do that. She enjoys making the breakfast, but
right.
Maybe there is a point at which there have to be results for the behavior of the other people.
Okay. And, you know, speaking to that point, Joe, one of the things that Rosie could do or any listener who finds themselves in this dilemma could do is if they don't want to have a big discussion about it and a big a big to-do about it, you could first try giving... Well, there we go. I mean, that would solve everything. You could give them cues. You could say something like, well, guys, come on, let's clean up. It's a lot of dishes. It'll be easier if we all do them. You may have to say something. And obviously you don't want to have to. It seems unfair. But kids can be very entitled in certain ways. And I think if you want the relationship to be good and you don't want to become increasingly more resentful, you're going to have to speak up.
Okay.
Anyway,
kids are 40 years old, but
a very concrete method of dealing with this might be.
Yes.
Say,
sorry to take up so much of your time with this, Susan.
Everybody, come on over. I'm going to make breakfast for myself. Oh, by the way, if you'd like breakfast, do your own dishes. Is that cool? Is that okay?
The hostile approach. Yeah, the hostile approach. Or you know what? Building on that, Joe, she could say, "Why don't you guys come over for breakfast? I got a deal for you. I'll make you breakfast. I'll set it all up. You clean up." And that will, you
I'll
can give them
breakfast.
Kind of loud cue like that.
I'll hang out and have a glass of water.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to have to move on. But I think that's a big one that a lot of people experience, that how can I say what I'm feeling if it's a very difficult thing in a way that doesn't alienate the listener or just create a big to-do that I want to avoid. And what I'm saying to you, Rosie, is sometimes you cannot and should not avoid saying it, because if the not saying it generates resentment and it fuels, and you become complicit in fueling someone's entitlement, that's not a good thing. You're not helping the relationship by fostering entitlement or somebody just taking advantage of your good-naturedness. You're not helping anything.
That's
doing
a good
that.
Point. Well, you and Joe are both invited.
Okay. But we have to do dishes, right?
Oh, the flip side
I don't think I'd have to tell you.
The flip side of this whole thing is that possibly – your guests or your children really don't want to spend the time doing the dishes, don't want to spend the time, you know, hassling with the after effects of a wonderful breakfast, and would rather just go to McDonald's. Serious.
You know
Probably.
What? I don't think so. My sense is that they want it both ways. They want the advantages of a nice home-cooked meal without the disadvantage of cleanup. And part of what we all have to let go of as we get older is our entitlement. We cannot have our cake and eat it too. Anyway, in the interest of moving on, because believe it or not, it's already 9:36. I can't believe this. Let me get to a few others and then see what you two think about this. And anybody else, we have more callers, just feel free to join in if you have a question or a comment. Another one, just very quickly, that I see as a big communication problem is a complaint focus, that the talker will just start complaining and complaining and complaining, and rather than saying what they need, and I think we're all guilty of this at times, we use you statements, you do this, you do that, and in what I find is that embedded in every complaint is a request. If you really think about it, I wish you would do this. I need you to do that. Would you please do this? And the very quick, easy fix, so that you don't become a complainer who then gets tuned out by your listener. And that's something, Rosie, you might want to think about when you think about your husband and kids who don't listen. Do you say what you need instead? Do you frame it in the positive? Or are you, you do this, and I don't like when you do this. People get overloaded on that stuff, and they just tune out. So I think you'll have a better listener if you're giving your listener an opportunity to have an impact and to do something that makes a difference. So that would be my quick fix, just to make your request clear. Another one is poor listening in communication, and that can be, and we've referenced it already, but where there's preoccupation elsewhere, I see this all the time with one partner talking while another partner is writing or looking out the window, or what?
Texting.
Texting, absolutely.
Yes.
The listener, supposed listener, is preoccupied. And there's no eye contact. And I'll often hear one partner say, well, I'm listening. What I say to people, and here's the quick fix, show listening. Show listening with your behavior. So turn to your partner, maintain eye contact. And again, if it's not the time, declare that, you know what, I'm kind of into something right now. I can't have this conversation now. And let your partner know. Negotiate, the two of you, negotiate what would be a better time. But to say
in other
you're
words,
listening.
Don't be rude.
Exactly. It's,
you know, in some respects, it's a generational thing.
Yes.
Because you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about people who are texting on a regular basis, I would feel safe in generalizing that is a generation, you know, 30 years and younger.
Yes.
And on the other hand, if you're talking about people who aren't listening because they're simply burned out from listening, or
there's
a problem in the method of communication, you know, boot texting and all that type of electronic stuff, it's probably an older generation, and they've simply been together for a long time and haven't communicated about these particular problems.
The younger
generation seems to be, you know, I'm older, I may not agree with this, but they seem to be pretty happy and healthy about multiple tasking in terms of communication.
Yes.
And don't have such an aversion to interruption in terms of texting and that type of thing as our generation might have. But
Why, how tolerant you are.
It seems like a generational thing. Well, yeah.
I think it is very generational, and I think the best that I would encourage the supposed listener, if you want the talker to feel heard, to make eye contact and to try to put that phone down, to not be texting, to not be looking out the window, to show that you're engaged, because I think you will, the talker will have more of an experience of having your full attention. Yes, I think you're right, Joe, that the younger generation, they have a much higher tolerance of multiple things going on, not feeling that it's rude if they're in a restaurant and their friends are having a conversation to also be having a conversation with somebody texting on the phone. I'm not sure.
Right, and they may look at their parents' generation and say, hey, what's the problem here? And not really even comprehend why there is a problem at all.
They might not. They might not. But I think...
I agree. It is a very rude thing to do.
Yeah. If your partner experiences it as rude, clearly it's behavior that you don't want to do. And what I would say is, coming from my generation, you know, I don't think it's the optimal way to show attention because you're really dividing yourself. You're splitting yourself between two different people, or sometimes more than two different people.
Well,
anyway,
you're not getting your full attention.
You're not. You're not. And what I say to people...
That is rude.
Yeah, I say show attention.
Absolutely.
Show attention with eye contact and put down the cell phone.
Yeah, the ability that our generation perceives that as rude, and their generation perceives us as being very needy because they don't even comprehend why that would be rude.
Yes, yes. And so maybe part of the answer here is that if you're with someone of your generation... And you're under 30, and you're used to that, and your talker doesn't get offended by that, you can get away with that. So consider whom you're with. If you're with somebody who really wants and needs all of you at once, or somebody who's older and is not used to that what I think is that nonsense, you need to consider whom you're with, and that will kind of inform you about what the rules of engagement are. Now, we do need to move on. It's 9:42. I have a few others. Another problem I see is kitchen sinking, and it's really information overload. So where you throw in, the talker throws in everything but the kitchen sink, and that's where you can do that in a number of ways. The talker could use repetition. I know I'm guilty of that. Or they cascade issues. They talk about A and B and C and D, and they lose their listener. And there's no central focus in what they're saying. And they might think that there's a focus, but there's no clear focus. And I think you lose a listener very quickly that way. There's a kind of information overload. What I suggest to people as a quick fix is decide on what the most pressing issue is. You cannot talk about three distinct things at once. And
keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid. Absolutely. And if you're, and by the way, in my experience, again, women are more guilty of this. They'll talk about all different kinds of things, and they'll go into context and history, and then there's an eye roll, and they lose their husband or their boyfriend. If you're using examples and you're referencing A, B, C, D, and it's really all the same subject, try to state what the underlying theme is related to the different things you're bringing up. So if you're referencing different situations, but there's a theme, and the theme is I felt lonely, or I didn't feel like you were participating, try to state what the theme is that connects the different seemingly distinct subjects. And I think you'll be doing a better job of priming your listener to what you're trying to say. And again, a listener, in terms of a fix, a listener can always ask, like, well, you're bringing up all these different things. What do you want me to respond to? And that's where the talker can say, well, it's not all these different things. It's all really kind of variations on a theme. And I see that a lot in my work with couples. It happens a lot. And it's generally a problem. Now, There's another one, a big problem, communication problem, is what I call outcome ambiguity. And that's where there's either alternate realities about the outcome, we've all experienced this, or there is no apparent outcome. You just talk, and there's no seeming agreement or resolution. I'll often ask couples, so what did you decide, or what was the outcome? And they'll say none. Or they're not sure. So what I encourage people to do is to restate their takeaway, to reiterate in your own words what you think the outcome was, because people have alternate realities very often about what the agreement was or where we got to in the conversation, and you can avoid a lot of misunderstandings if you each just quickly say, okay, so we're going to do this, this, and this with the kids when they act up, right? That's kind of what we agreed on, right? And the other person might say, yeah, or they might say, no, I thought we agreed on this. But to restate it in your own words so that you end up on the same page. And let's say there was no outcome. Let's say you were trying to solve a problem and you didn't get to any kind of resolution. I think it's important to negotiate a mutual outcome or some resolution, even if it's preliminary. So it might be, okay, well, we haven't decided what to do in the way of consequences for Johnny. Obviously, we're talking about the problems with Johnny, but why don't we just think about what we think appropriate consequences would be? Do you know what I'm saying? So maybe you didn't get to the final point in the conversation, but at least you agree upon where we left off and what we're thinking about or what the task is.
Pick it up later.
Question is, does the couple really agree, or is somebody simply, you know, saying, yeah, okay, I agree, and feeling that there's a loss of autonomy?
Couples often don't agree. No, often couples don't agree, but then that would be the outcome. Okay, then we're kind of leaving this, and we feel differently about it. And we can each think about the other's point of view. We obviously feel differently. You don't have to agree. What I'm saying is it's better to state it. Because,
in a perfect world.
Yeah.
In a perfect
world. It's better
world.
To state it. Now, you're a guy, Joe. Are you likely to disagree or not like what you're hearing and just be silent about it?
So, in a sense, what you're saying is to agree not to agree in certain situations.
To agree on where you left off. So let's say, Joe, you're talking to a partner or a friend, and they see it one way and you see it another, and the conversation's coming to an end and you haven't resolved it. I think it would be important for you to say, well, we're leaving off, and obviously we're in different places about this. Obviously we each need to think about some stuff. Rather than moving away from the conversation and each of you thinking we got to something, or we just left it hanging and we don't even know where it was hanging, that's very frustrating for partners. Just to kind of decide on what was the end point and what's the resolution, if any. It's a better policy.
Or maybe we all need to see Dr. Sue.
Well, sometimes that, Dr. Sue, you're another person calling me doctor here. Why do people insist that I become a doctor? Anyway, sometimes that's the resolution. We can't agree on this. We don't seem to do well with
it. We need a third party.
Yeah. Let's ask a third party. But wherever you end off, what I'm saying is to kind of reiterate in your own words your understanding of where you left off, because I see so many couples move away from a conversation and one partner thinks the agreement was A and the other partner thinks they agreed on B. And because conversations are entirely subjective, all of us have selective hearing, and we hear what we want. And we see what we want, and we take away kind of what we want or what we believe. And it's very important when you're trying to, in a lot of conversations, to come away with it with some mutual understanding of what you're coming away with. And that's especially true if you're trying to solve a problem.
Or there's always Agendas.
You just dive into some ice cream and say, oh, the heck with it. I can't talk to this person. this is just impossible. That's always another option. Just avoid and medicate yourself with either ice cream, booze, or medicine. That's another solution there. Very helpful, Rosie. I'll have to suggest that to all my clients. Now, my final one that I thought of was hogging the airtime. I know I'm guilty about this with my husband, where one person just literally keeps talking, and there are no pauses, and they leave no room. There's like no paragraphs. There's no end. It's a run-on sentence. There's no room for dialogue. And then they wonder, and I see this so clearly in my work with couples. One person keeps talking and talking and talking, and the other person starts looking at the view, and they start looking at their notes, and you know that they have completely checked out. And then the talker says, why aren't you listening to me? What do you think? You're not saying anything. So what I say to people, the very easy fix there, and I remind myself of this a lot, is to allow for responses, to see a conversation as a dialogue, and to pause. And some people, by the way, need more time to formulate their thoughts. Their timing issue is different. To give your partner time to formulate a thought and get back to you, to think of a conversation as a two-way street where you take turns. It's not a monologue.
Very good advice.
Yeah, yeah. I remember my husband and I were friends with a couple, and every time we would see them, she would just talk. She would not shut up the whole entire time. And I remember another friend referencing her and saying, I know her. It's a giant monologue talking to her. I can't stand it. And
finish what you were saying. Well, yesterday I went out to dinner with my grandchildren. They're 8 years old. Mm-hmm. They're twins. And one is very talkative and engaging, and the other one's more of an introvert and rather impish. And at one point in the they were having a conversation with the waitress. And the one who was more engaging was leading the conversation. I heard my other grandson say, can I just get a word in?
Oh, my God. Oh, how funny. So he's feeling it, and he's like a little
actually,
kid.
That was the very first time that I really heard him, and I really, it took me aback, and I said, you know what? The other one, in social situations, he does tend to take over. And because they're twins, it can be very hard. And the more introverted one doesn't get to be heard as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It can start really young. And that's another whole show, what sets that up, why somebody might talk compulsively and just go on and on and on and on. I mean, that's another five shows. I think we would all do better in conversations if we are mindful about, do we give the listener time to respond? And do we pause? And are there paragraphs? Is there an end to the sentence also? And if they're not responding, do we pause and say, what do you think?
I'm very guilty of, Susan?
What?
I'm very guilty of interrupting, as you might have surmised by now. I catch myself very often interrupting, and I think a lot of people do that.
I do, too. And that, again, I do, too. And that that's another communication problem, and I didn't even think to mention it because maybe it's I'm too close to the forest to see the trees. If you come from a family where it was kind of a free-for-all, and as did I don't know about yours, but where it was each man for himself, and it was like very fast pace, and everybody kind of talked over each other, and that was considered the norm, then that's what you're going to bring with you into your relationships and as a conversation style. So interrupting is highly problematic.
Very.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. I think just think about taking turns in a conversation and really noticing how long have I had the airtime. I really appreciate your input, Rosie. It's been and you too, Joe. Joe had to leave. I see he's checked out here. He didn't say goodbye. Boy, that's a
good
thing.
Oh, he must have been texting.
There's another one. When a conversation ends, define the end of the conversation and say, well, I got to go. Goodbye. But he can't defend himself, so I'll be easy on him. In any event, there's probably many, many more conversation stoppers, conversation problems, things that unfold in conversations that if you're just mindful and you're thinking and you're considering the context, considering the listener, thinking about what you're trying to say, looking at your approach, considering the timing, taking turns, I think a lot of it can be avoided. And obviously, Joe brought up a good point, as well as you, Rosie, that there are other things that enter into it. Your dilemma about as the mom not wanting to ruin the moment, not wanting to weird out your kids, or not feeling safe about bringing things up. Those are content, what we call in my field content issues, that the content can feel really difficult or painful, and that's another whole show. What I'm talking about here is process. It's the rules of engagement, and it's the method, the technical aspects of conversation, no matter what you're talking about. Anyway, I want to thank all you listeners. We have to wrap up. We got to go. It's 9:58. I want to thank you, listeners, and thank you very much, Rosie, for participating and sharing your insights. I really appreciate it. I hope it can help.
Send me a bill. You can send me a bill.
Okay, I'll send you a bill. You'll have to send me your address and just tell me what your charge is there. But you shared some very useful things. I really appreciate it. I want to thank all you listeners who didn't ask any questions. And if for more insights and tools about relationships, you can go to my website, SusanLager.com, and you'll find my blog. I have a membership site that should be up and running soon. But I share my thoughts and insights about relationship issues there with regularity. I have articles that you can access through that site, published articles, et cetera. I have an ebook that's coming out soon. And tune into my next show, which will be, unless I goof off again, Wednesday, July 27th at 9 p.m., and it's my mystery topic with my mystery guest. I'm not going to say yet who it is and what it's about, so you'll have to tune in to find out about what I'm going to be dealing with. So anyway, good night, everyone. The storm behaved. I'm still here. Hope you all enjoyed the show and hope to see you again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.